Is your club suffering from a lack of media exposure and not enough publicity? Are your own members and supporters constantly shrugging their shoulders and saying, "We didn't know that"? Or are you a parent of a talented child whose sporting achievements have gone unnoticed and you are wondering why? We can make all the excuses under the sun while we are the victims. Or we can get the help of the experts. At Community Sports Media Services, our mission is to allow all community sporting organisations an opportunity to promote and publicise their achievements, activities and important internal club information to their players, members and supporters, as well as provide a tool for promoting the club to all interested outside parties. To find out how we can take your club to the next level, ring us on 0402 012 716 or email communitysportsmedia@gmail.com. Don't forget to like our Facebook page, Community Sports Media Services. Don't let your club remain in the shadows of obscurity. Come out into the spotlight and shine. It's showtime.
The Change Rooms.
Welcome back to the Geelong Region Soccer Show here on FNR Football Nation Radio. Now, one of Australia's leading football historians, if not the most eminent of them all, he is indeed the guru of all things football history at the local Geelong level, and he's our very own. It's Mr. Roy Hay. He's joining us on the line. An absolute pleasure to welcome football royalty into the studio, albeit via the phone. Roy, how are you? How's Bannockburn tonight?
Bannockburn is quiet and well-behaved, as it always is. It's a great place to live. Certainly at our age, we're delighted to be here.
I must say, at least the reception's better from Bannockburn than it was from
Mount
Moriac. Yes.
You haven't got any cows sort of interfering with reception there, no?
Oh, they've all moved out of Bannockburn now, I think, haven't they?
It used to be quite difficult at times. I appeared on the front cover of the Miner with a USB connection pointing out that Telstra did not connect. But luckily, these days are behind us.
Now, Roy, you're a retired fellow now, but from what we've heard, you're busier than ever. With all the things that you get up to. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that now?
Well, it's certainly true. You begin to wonder how you manage to fit work in, or alternatively, as I say, you've got to retire to become productive. Among other things, we've just opened an exhibition at Deakin University's waterfront campus.
Yeah, do tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, it's called Goals and Glory, Deakin University Library Soccer Collection. And we've got something like 20,000 of Les Shorrock's photographs and more from that were collected by Laurie Schwab, two of the most important journalists and photographers engaged in the game. This is the centerpiece of the exhibition, but there's a whole series of different panels, memorabilia that's been lent for the exhibition, a sound system that has background information, a timeline that rotates, and a mass of material that demonstrates, A, the rich history of the game, but also the sources and the way that you can use them to tell all sorts of stories, some about the game, some about perhaps your family history.
Yeah, how did it come about that we in Geelong have got this amazing photo exhibition at you know, one of certainly the most picturesque campuses in Australia, down on the waterfront, the Deakin University campus. Tell us the background, how that came about.
Well, this goes back to the days of that legendary newspaper, Soccer Action, that ran from about 1977 till 1987, I think. Laurie Schwab was the editor, and Les Shorrock was one of the journalists, and they had great difficulty in getting it was an age part of the Age Fairfax group, and they had great difficulty in getting the photographs they required prepared and ready in time for the appearance of soccer action. So eventually, Les decided that he would get himself a camera and teach himself photography. And then, with the aid of a slab of beer and a couple of pies, managed to persuade the guy who ran the dark room in the Fairfax building to let him come in and develop his... Well, first of all, teach him how to develop the photographs and then let him develop them so that Soccer Action got its photographs on in time. Now, when the paper... in 1987, somebody from Fairfax appeared on the doorstep and said, "Look, that's your last issue. We're closing the paper down. Take all these photographs to the tip and get rid of them." And Laurie and Les, of course, exploded about that. And Les loaded up his station wagon, I think maybe three or four trips, to take all this home. Later on, he donated the photographs to the Australian Soccer Federation, as they were in those days. And a few years later, they had a change of personnel, and somebody else had the idea that this stuff was just clogging up space, and told the people to again take it to the tip. Luckily, at that point, Laurie Schwab's widow, Helen, and I found out about it, and we managed to get them the photographs brought back down to Victoria, and I persuaded the archivist at Deakin University to find space to accommodate them, and that's how we've managed to save them.
Unreal.
And the rest is history.
Isn't it?
Amazing. There you go. So twice they were almost on the verge of being thrown out.
Yeah.
And they've been rescued in the meantime. If there was any reason to go out and see this, that's definitely a reason. Now, where can they actually see it? So it's at the Waterfront Campus. What's the best way to get there?
If you come down Western Beach Road to Cunningham Street, that's one of the little streets that runs at right angles to Western Beach Road. And you just go into Cunningham Street. The first on the right, there's a double set of glass doors. Walk through there, and the exhibition is on your left. There's no charge for admission. It's been open since the 6th of June, and it will be open until the 29th of July. It's a wonderful thing to go and see. I cannot believe that anybody would walk in and walk out without learning a great deal, not just about the game, but its place in Australian culture and society and history, and probably be inspired to pursue stories, perhaps family stories, perhaps club stories, on the basis of the information they'll get from the exhibition.
Oh, brilliant.
It's exciting. And as I say, I cannot imagine anybody who will not be gobsmacked by what we have there.
Just ask me. Just wanting to ask you very quickly: is there much of a local flavour? Like, are there photographs of local games or local cup competitions, for example, the Geelong Addy Cup or anything like that?
There are indeed. We have a special panel for local heroes. But then remember that lots of the local people went on to play at higher levels. So you'll see them both with, let's say, West Geelong or North Geelong, and then you can see them at National League and several of them.
It sounds like Chris Trajanovsky,
I think. The team of Socceroos,
Yeah, we had Chris Trajanovsky, Roy, on last week's show, and we actually made mention of the fact that he had a mullet back in those days. So hopefully there might be a photo or two of Chris Trajanovsky with his mullet.
There is indeed.
Bingo. This is better than winning tonight's Oz Lotto of $50 million.
Well, I can say to all of our watchers and listeners, make sure you get on down to the waterfront down there at Deakin and get a look at this exhibition. It sounds like there's something there for everyone. Now, Roy, while we got you on air and you've got such experience in the game and in Australia, I want to talk a little bit about the history of women's football in Victoria and Geelong. And what can you tell us about your knowledge of the women's game?
Well, the first thing to make as a point is that the women's game is much older than people think. I mean, women were playing football at a high level in Scotland in the 1880s. There was another reference about 1895 when a team was created at that time, played in England and hit the headlines and was reported widely in newspapers in Australia at that time. But the game really expanded during the First World War when men went away to fight and the factories needed labour. And so women often replaced them in industrial employment during the First World War. And quite often they set up football teams as part of the recreation.
So while the women went out, while the men went out to fight on the fronts, the women went out to fight on the fields.
Exactly. And I mean, just after the war, one of the teams, Dick Kerr's Ladies in England, played at Goodison Park, Everton, and drew a crowd of 50,000 to a game. I mean, it's just quite incredible. Mm. Even here in Australia in the 1920s, in Brisbane, a crowd of 10,000 turned out to see a North versus South game there. So the game has a much longer history than we tend to realise. Mm. The FA in England banned clubs from allowing women to play on their grounds, and that set the game back there. But it kept popping up in Australia through the 20s and 30s, mm. and then really began to kick off after the Second World War in the 60s. And what I'm sure a lot of people don't realise is that the women set up the first national competition for football in 1977, before the men had a national league.
What happened with that? That's interesting.
Well,
it
began to develop from there. Regular competition. Women took part in a prior to the World Cup, a series of competitions in China, Hong Kong and China, where the Australian women took part. And eventually, began with the start of the FIFA World Cups, and we've been playing in FIFA World Cups since 1995 in Sweden. And of course, the national team eventually got the new nickname, the Matildas. And since then, we've had both a national league for women and a very strong international reputation. Once again, we are competing in the World Cup in France.
Speaking of which, I read an article just the other day where it said the ratings for the Matildas, despite the result, actually exceeded the ratings, the TV ratings for the Men's Cricket World Cup that's happening at the moment. I think it was Australia and India or whoever it was. That just goes to show how far we've come as far as the mainstream popularity of the women's team, the Matildas, but also of the actual, I suppose, the sport itself. Like, the football has just become such a mainstream part of Australian society.
We're by far the biggest participation sport nowadays. The gender balance within football is really quite impressive already. And I think it'll be 50-50 before we know it. So the women's game is immensely strong now. And there's this huge base of participation. If we could only translate that into people who would follow on a regular basis, local teams and our national teams, either by attending games or, as we saw, and you're quoting a moment ago, watching them on television.
Well, that brings us, I guess, to the last point. Historians like to look at history and study history, but they've always got one eye on the future and what may happen or what possibly could happen.
The oracles.
The oracles. if we look into the crystal ball, we've got a crystal ball over here. If we look into the crystal ball, Roy, from your point of view, what do you see for the sport, let's say locally, nationally, and I guess internationally?
Okay, well, let's start at the local level. We still have a very fragmented game. I've been disappointed that over the years we still have not got a single team to represent Geelong at the highest levels. The women are closer to it than the men are at the moment. But this is something which I think we have. I mean, if you look at the Geelong area, we've probably a population of about 250,000 in the greater Geelong area. Now, that should be plenty to sustain a team, a single team at the national level representing the Geelong area. At the moment, we've got a couple of teams in the Victorian Premier League. That's great. But the history of this has always been that the team that thinks it's the best in Geelong always believes it can go alone and do better than as part of a collective. I think, looking at this from the outside, that is simply wrong. It's been proved wrong. Now, we are going to have something that will be of great advantage, I think, in the short run, and that is the new Western United team will actually be playing in Geelong for at least the first couple of seasons while it builds its own stadium at Tarneed. I'd like to think that might show the people of Geelong that we could do this ourselves. So in that sense, I'm optimistic about the future. The local clubs certainly provide a game for a mass of people. In fact, I'm sure, Tonchi, you know this, the real problem is the lack of facilities for the game.
Absolutely.
We're bursting at the seams for men and women. So we need to do something about that collectively and individually. But if you're given those two elements, I think it's onwards and upwards, even at the local level. Now, if we move to the National League, I'm very hopeful that Western United will be a competitive team from the start. We'll get more derbies between Melbourne clubs. That can only be good for everybody, I think. And it would increase the number of players who are playing at the top level in this country who are eligible to play for the national side. One of our problems has been, since the A-League was set up, that the number of places available for young players to break into senior sides have been reduced from the days of the National Soccer League. And that hasn't helped our general development, especially at a time when the Asian countries are going ahead by leaps and bounds. I think we'll find it more and more difficult to qualify for World Cups and Asian Championships and so on, if we don't do something about the depth of our squads at the National League level.
Absolutely. Roy, I think unfortunately we might have to leave that there. And the reason why we'll leave that there, apart from running out of time, but, you know, we've already got comments on the Facebook thread, including from Leonie Smith saying, Roy needs to be a regular. Roy, the legend and true gentleman, says Carl Hamel. Basically, we're going to have to get you back on and on another episode of the show, and then we can go even more into the future internationally, as well as delve into more intricate details of our rich footballing past. Roy, absolute pleasure.
Do you think we can do that? Would you like to come back and join us? Have we been all right to you?
Oh, I think I could be forced to do that, yeah.
You've got about 65,733 witnesses on our Facebook at the moment. They're all giving the thumbs up, so you've got no choice, yeah. Roy, absolute pleasure. Thank you once again. For those that can see Facebook Live, we've got a couple of your books that you've produced very recently. The history
of Australians.
Well, maybe
we'll talk about some of those next time.
Absolutely. Deal. In the not too distant future. Thank you once again, Roy. Thanks very much.
Thanks for the generosity of your time, Roy. Really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure from my point of view. Thanks for that. And more power to your elbow, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you. It was Roy Hay, one of the leading historians, football historians.